Welcome to The Boiler Room, an arena of podcasts. We're your hosts, Santiago and Julia. And today, Julia, we're talking about campaign planning. How many days are we out? Exactly 90 days?
Yeah.
All right. Deep breath.
We got this.
If you're riding along in a car or sitting at your computer at home, working, listening to this, you're like, Santiago, it's actually less than this, because who knows like when you're listening to this. So like, oh my gosh, it's happening. Yeah, we thought it was really important to make sure that we got to talk about planning. And what do plans even mean right now in the age of COVID with less than 90 days or 90 days out? Like, where do we go from here? Like, how do we figure out what we're doing?
Yeah, I don't know about you, Santiago, but when COVID hit, I just decided that plans were irrelevant and just been taking it day by day.
You're joking though, right?
Oh yeah, no, I'm definitely
You just
kidding.
Live your life 1/4 mile at a time.
Yeah, but I think like we have to be real about it though, Santiago. It is hard. It's hard to plan in our personal lives right now, you know, like all of our vacations, all of the, you know, things that we thought we were gonna do, we can't and we haven't been for the most part. And so on the personal level, you know, plans seem like this remote, distant thing. But then therefore, what does that mean for us on campaigns? Like, what are campaigns doing? These things that so rely upon plans, right? We need plans to keep our teams aligned. We need plans to help, you know, our donors, our candidates, all these folks understand where we're going and how we're gonna get there. And so, you know, I think that there's just been this strange kind of mental and psychological shift of plans that have become so difficult in our own lives. And therefore, what does that mean for planning on campaigns?
Yeah, I mean, and this is a big conversation we've had here at Arena with respect to the intentional planning around something like GOTV, which for a lot of campaigns in the past, now is about the time when campaigns start to think about not just campaign planning, but specifically for GOTV. What are the final days of the campaign going to look like? And I think something that, you know, I don't know if it was Abby who said it, because we were just having kind of a team brainstorm around like, what does training look like around GOTV? And I think we all kind of collectively came to the agreement that like, well, the goal is still the same. The goal is still to get votes. The goal is still to be talking to voters. And so while some of the underlying tactics might change because of COVID, the inability to see people in person and talk to them and have those conversations, hold big events, the goal is still the same. We still have to win these elections. These elections are more important than ever, and have real consequences if we lose. And so it is still important to still be able to communicate that to your team internally, to your donors externally, to say like, here's where we are, here's where we're going. And I think that still remains true. And, you know, I think about how chaotic campaigns can feel, even without global pandemic happening, and how reactionary you can feel in the moment. And to be able to sketch out, like, here's what the plan is for the next 90 days. Here's what the team is going to prioritize, helps you and puts you in a better position to be able to react to those things. And so I still think that even though in our personal lives, everything can be in flux, it is important to continue to do some planning and to be able to come back to that as kind of a, what's our North Star?
I think that's so true. And I also think that, you know, on that sort of personal plane, it helps us to have things to work towards, to have goals that are set, that are clear, that are concrete. We might miss them, right? It might not work. We might not kind of hit all the boxes that we thought we were going to when we created a plan, but that's information that's helpful for us going forward. You know, if you miss organizing goals, or if you, you know, aren't on track for where you thought you would be on raising money, it's not, you know, the moment to say, well, it didn't work, so therefore we're just gonna, you know, stop planning or shooting for these things. We're gonna take it a day at a time. No, you know, this is still an important moment to get that information and to say, okay, how do we have to adjust our plans? How do we have to adjust our goals to meet the moment, to understand where we're going to be going in the next 3 months? And then also, I think just, you know, for ourselves in this remote environment, it's helpful to have that North Star. It's helpful to have that thing that you're working towards. And again, you know, whatever that may be as far as your goals or your internal metrics or your external metrics that you're tracking on campaigns, having those things to hold on to and to guide your actions when you have those moments staring at a blank spreadsheet or a blank document on your computer and just wondering, what do I do today and how do I make this move forward? We need those things to return to say, oh, look, I have something. I know what I need to do today. I know what has to happen, rather than just constantly reacting to whatever's at the top of our inbox or whoever most recently texted or called us.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can get pulled off track by so many different things. And right now you also can feel the pressure to kind of throw your hands up in the air because so much of the environment has changed. You know, maybe you're in a state where voting by mail has just never traditionally been done. Or, you know, voters are not used to having options for any sort of early voting. And so there can be so much that is new, and that can feel daunting. But I think sitting down and taking some time to be deliberate about, okay, what is the next 90 days? What does the next 30 days look like? You know, what are those benchmarks that you can evaluate if something is working or isn't working? And then what do you do about it? You know, you mentioned, you know, maybe we don't hit our organizing goals. Because right now, I think one of the things that's a big question is like, can we pivot volunteers who would have otherwise been interested in canvassing to do something else? And so often in the planning process, we're working off of assumptions. How many people per shift? How many people can we recruit? What can those individuals help us accomplish in a shift? And right now, there are questions about what do those things even mean? And like, are we going to see higher or lower contact rates because we're contacting so many people? Where there's such maybe an emphasis on phone conversations? You know, what kind of reactions are we getting in terms of digital ads, knowing that we might have to lean into that more? And so planning is also an opportunity to start testing those assumptions so that as you get closer and closer to when people are actually voting, you're able to lean into the tactics that might be the most effective in terms of implementing that larger strategy.
So Santiago, I'm super excited for our conversation today. And I just wanted to know, who are we talking to about planning?
We're going to be talking to Kate Catherall. She's co-founder of Arena. She was a partner, now sits on our board. She's currently at Avalanche Strategy and helping them think about, how do we talk to voters, and what are the messages that actually move them, persuade them, motivate them? And it's doing just like really interesting research into messaging. And it's work that I'm really, really excited about. But she is also an incredible planner. She is one of the architects behind the campaign planning tool, which is the most downloaded tool in the Arena toolbox. It is just connected to so many other tools in the toolbox that are like, you know, it gives you a framework for campaign planning. It is also a tool that we use at the Arena Academy to help us train our campaign managers and all of our campaign staffers. And this is an interesting podcast interview because we actually recorded this way before COVID times. The Arena Boiler Room podcast has been an idea that has just been percolating for a long time. And it's actually a podcast that I've been very, very nervous about. I think is an important thing to have to be able to bring in different perspectives. And Kate was instrumental in helping me kind of test it out. And we had a really interesting conversation. This is back in December of 2019. So just totally different world. We were sitting in a convention space as they were setting up the Arena Academy in Phoenix, our last in-person. We had no idea at the time. And so we just had a really great conversation about campaign planning. It goes all over the place. But I think one of the important things here with you, Julia, was just giving a little bit of context on like, I think that's a really important conversation to listen to have a foundation for, but also recognizing that things are a little different now. And Kate and I make reference to in-person events and, you know, where do you send your candidate and things like that. And like, those are also just in this reality is just so different now. But I also thought it was important to just make sure that you all got an opportunity to hear from Kate, like I said, this is a podcast that we've been thinking about for such a long time, and I've been very nervous about doing. But I also think it's a really great opportunity to bring in voices that you might have heard of if you know of Arena, but maybe you haven't heard of before. And Kate's one of those really important voices in the space that I want to make sure you hear from, and is the whole reason we do this podcast. So excited for you to listen to our interview with Kate Catherall.
I'm so excited. Let's dive in.
I'm here with Arena partner and co-founder, Kate Catherall. And today we're going to talk about campaign planning, kind of the piece de resistance of the Arena toolbox. Like, everything else stems and flows from this. So I wanted to pick Kate's brain and see what her take is on campaign planning. She's a campaign planning expert. And so wanted to make sure when we're starting this podcast that we get a chance to talk to her first, because I think this is going to be an enlightening and useful conversation for a lot of folks who right now, we're in December 2019. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many days out from Election Day we actually are, but
I think it's 335.
Nobody's keeping track.
I am.
And so that means people right now are probably in the midst of planning out their campaigns, or maybe they're in the midst of their just starting their campaigns, and maybe they haven't even thought about doing a plan. So maybe this hopefully will get folks starting thinking about that. And so, Kate, I wanted to start this off by asking you, like, why do we plan? We're here in Phoenix, where we are doing one of our academies.
Kicking off tomorrow. The day after, I have to interrupt and say, happy birthday. It's Santiago Martinez's birthday today, everybody. Tell everyone how old you are?
This is the 35th.
It's a big birthday.
It's a big birthday. And all I wanted for my birthday was
a strategic plan.
And hopefully you all can get that. My gift to you.
Yeah.
For myself. So you can win and this country can be better. So I did want to, like, we're here at the Academy. Planning is such a big component of the curriculum, what we teach. We do a whole simulation where people will write out a campaign plan, maybe for the first time. But Kate, I wanted to get your take, like, why is that so important? Why was it important to you that it was a big component of Academy?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing that we have to acknowledge about working on campaigns is that they're really high stakes. You literally win or lose. So as much as we don't want politics to be a zero-sum game, campaigns become that in the final days, right? It all comes down to an actual election when votes get cast and your candidate makes it or they don't and almost doesn't count. And so operating in this scenario where the stakes are so high and there is an end date, so your time is finite, and you are hustling for every single dollar that comes in the door to power your campaign, you're faced with this challenge to just be really strategic with your resources and to maximize every single dollar that comes in. Because the worst thing that could happen is that you get all the way to Election Day and you realize that, you know, you sort of bungled the management of resources and that's why you're behind.
Yeah.
So if we sort of accept that as the premise, then the idea that you would operate without a plan is really crazy, because it's sort of the easiest way to get in trouble. And I've worked with a number of managers over the years who, like, really needed convincing that this is something you just sit down and do. You know, and for me, in my own experience, like, finding the time to do it is probably the thing that gets in the way.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to kind of become avoidant and say, like, well, we're just going to figure it out, take it one day at a time. When you do that, it really puts you in a bad position, because you don't have what I always call, like, your tennis stance. Like, you're not ready to respond and the ball's going to fly all over the court. Like, you can count on that in a campaign environment. So, you know, if we're sort of boiling it down to the reasons why writing a campaign plan is important, it's one, you have to maximize every resource and your resources are finite. Two, the stakes are really, really high. And so you want to do your job well. And three, things are going to change. They're going to change rapidly and quickly. You need to be able to respond rapidly. You don't know what's going to happen. And so you have to have a plan to maximize your resources. You have to have scenarios for what you're going to do to respond when things come flying at you. And without that basic framework and that roadmap, you're going to find yourself in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And I think those scenarios are important, because, like, what's coming at you could be a good situation. It could be a bad situation. It's not always planning for the worst. And so, you know, what are those points in the campaign where, like, you know, those decision points might happen for people that they should be trying to prepare for?
Yeah. I mean, well, to your point about, like, the good scenarios, one of the best problems to have that is actually really common is that in the final month of a campaign when voters and supporters and donors are paying the most attention or are kind of the most engaged, we tend to see a lot of money flow in. It's a lot easier to raise money in the October before November election than it is in January before November election. And it also means that you have to spend it really quickly. And so I've worked with a number of campaigns where in those final 2 weeks, thousands and thousands of dollars are flowing in, and you don't want to be the manager who either can't figure out how to spend it or spends it in a really silly way. You and I have had like 1,000 conversations about all the bad ways that people spend late money, spending it on that like 13th mail piece that isn't going to make any difference, you know, going back to do a paid canvas in a neighborhood that has already been knocked 5 or 6 times and everyone who you're going to talk to, you've already talked to. Knowing where your gaps are and knowing where there's more room to actually make an impact or turn out extra voters is so important. You can't do that if you don't have a plan, you're not measuring progress.
Yeah. And what would you say are your, you know, four first time or, you know, just campaign managers in general, what are those, you know, in addition to say using this template that is, you know, lays out all the different components, like what are the guiding principles behind it? Like what should people be thinking about as they are approaching, you know, filling out what their template is for their campaign and, you know, making their own plan? What are those guiding principles?
Well, it's super easy to get intimidated, I think, by how exhaustive the list of things that you have to plan is. And so I think the first thing to remember is that you have to start big, like zoom out and then zoom in. So I always start by backwards mapping from election day. That's kind of like the chief organizing principle for writing a plan, is starting at the end and working your way backward from that. And before you start kind of drilling down on tactics and figuring out, you know, what your calendar looks like for social media or when you're going to go, you know, start knocking doors of persuadable voters, what you really have to get right first is your overall strategy and your pathway to victory. Mm-hmm. So, and you spend a lot of time doing this, Santiago, so I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about this, but figuring out what your vote goal is, and this is always just our best guess of typically 50% plus one of expected turnout, unless we're looking at like a primary or a ranked choice, but 50% plus one. How are we actually going to register, persuade, and turn out voters to get to that win number? Who are those people? So targeting your purview again, and then figuring out what our message is to reach those people and how we're going to tactically reach them. And if you don't have that framework of your goal, your strategy, and your tactics first, then everything else you do risks just kind of wandering all over the place. So starting with, I'm going to backwards map, I'm going to figure out my strategic framework, and then fleshing out your program plans, thinking about what your timeline looks like, setting goals for yourself that are measurable, that are ambitious but realistic. So if by June we have accomplished X, we know that we're on our way to be where we need to be in October. Those are sort of the big hallmarks. I think there are a lot of other things we could talk about in terms of like, you know, things to think about when writing your program plan, but you want to get that big picture first, and then you can fill in all the details and make sure that it's all cohesive and integrated and aligned.
Yeah. And one thing I want to get your take on, because I think this is probably a common pitfall for people who are writing their plans for the first time. Can you dig in a little bit on the difference between the strategy and the tactics piece of it?
Yeah, those are terms that we just like use willy-nilly and people totally confuse. So when we talk about strategy, what we mean is how you're going to employ your resources to reach your goal overall. So it's the big picture approach of how you're going to get from A to Z. One sort of common refrain that I've heard that's another way to describe strategy is how you take what you have and turn it into what you need to get where you want to go. And that's essentially what we're talking about when we say strategy. So if you can't say it in like a sentence, it's probably not your strategy. Tactics are the specific actions that your campaign is taking to execute your strategy. So typically, this is when we start talking about modes of reaching voters. A door knock is a tactic, a phone call, a text message, a digital ad, an email. These are all examples of tactics. They're not your strategy.
Yeah. And I think that's an important distinction to make for folks at home, because you know, you can get really lost in that and say like, okay, we're just going to do a big text message program. And then you miss the whole who, what, where, when, why, like, okay, who are the people that we're, what are we saying to them? Are we trying to persuade them with this text message? Is that even the best way to? And so that confusion around tactics can really muddy the waters on on your overall strategy. And now you're spending a lot of money, maybe using one tactic when maybe that's not the best approach based off of hopefully some of the analysis that you've done on the district itself to figure out what you need to do to win.
And I feel like this is something the press exacerbates the confusion around, because they'll talk about the strategy of, you know, so-and-so's campaign is social media. And it's like, that's not a strategy. That's a channel for us to reach people. So I think what you said about, you know, the five W's, the like who, what, when, where, why, like of journalism, frankly, but knowing who your audience is and starting with that, right? That's really what the Pathway to Victory process is about. Yeah. Like, who are the people that we need to turn out and vote? How are we going to reach them? What's the message we're actually delivering when we reach them? What does that engagement actually look like? That's when we're getting to the tactical level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
And there's so many people that can kind of pull you off track also. Like, you know, there's, you know, somebody who has the ear of the candidate, or like a donor is like really interested in this one particular tactic. There's so many different ways that you can get off track. So having the plan to go back to and be able to say like, okay, well, this is, you know, we can do that, but it's also needs to be a component of this bigger thing.
And that actually, I think, raises another really important thing to remember if you're a manager and you're sitting down to write your plan, which is that you don't want to crowdsource it.
Yeah.
Like, it's really important to make sure that the people who compose your leadership team or are consulting on your campaign have input, and that they feel aligned across all the different sort of work streams, right? That they're all working together with one overarching strategy. But I have seen so many managers get on a call with consultants and basically say, what should we do? And I think it's really important to remember, if you're a manager, that you're the strategist. Yeah. And these are your partners, and they're there to empower you and support you and give you specialized expertise, but you're leading the team. When you crowdsource a strategy, that's when you end up going in a bunch of different directions. And to be frank, like, there are a lot of incentive structures for, you know, some vendors to say, no, like, you really got to go deep on mail, when maybe that isn't the best thing for your overall resource allocation. So that decision, like, you need to be the bottom line decision maker in those kinds of calls.
That's huge. Just even setting up that, like, setting yourself up for success in that power dynamic, because it's so easy for campaign managers to get lost in that. And then for the rest of the campaign, now it's set, like, these, you know, they're driving and not the campaign manager.
Yeah, it can be really overwhelming too,
yeah,
especially the first time you do it.
Totally. And so we could probably, I think we would probably go on for days talking about this. But one of the things I wanted to make sure we got a chance to talk about was, for those first-time campaign managers, people who are running local elections, maybe it's a smaller team, like, what are the tips for approaching campaign planning, especially if you're using a template like ours and there's so many different components to it, but you're a small team? How do you try to approach campaign planning and, you know, make sure that you're covering all your bases but not going too deep on everything?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. And I imagine that a lot of people download the Arena Campaign Plan template and are like, oh my God, it's an 18-page checklist. It might even be more than 18 pages. It's long.
It's, yeah.
I think, like, the most important thing for any size team is to take that template one step at a time. So we've designed it to operate on a sort of chronological basis. So the strategic framework that you do up front, the strategic overview where you're defining your vote goal, your strategy, your tactics, your message overall, that needs to be the first thing that gets done before you move on to any program plans. Program plans you can basically start working on, you know, at the same time. If you have leads who are, or department directors who are, you know, working on the organizing plan, the data plan, the comms plan, and the digital plan, they can do that at the same time. I think that leads me to sort of my second best practice, which is, if you are a manager with a team, whether they are volunteer leaders or staff or department heads, making sure that you walk through the overall strategy together and then outline how those different program plans need to be aligned together before people start putting pen to paper. That's really important. I have made the mistake myself of assuming that we're on the same page, right?
Yeah.
And then somebody goes and they write a whole plan and they come back to you and you're like, ooh, but this actually doesn't quite work with what we're doing over here. And if you're the manager and you delegated that without kind of outlining together to make sure that alignment existed, then that's kind of on you.
Yeah.
And then you have a lot of time that you have to make up for, right? And go back and rewrite a plan. So I think taking the time to align on the front end with your team, making sure everybody's clear on the big picture, and then drilling down into the details of programs, and really encouraging everybody to think about how their programs can lift up what their teams or what their other teammates are doing, super important. In a best, you know, best case scenario, you have everybody sort of enhancing each other's work. They can really only do that if they have transparency and line of sight into what their teammates are working on.
Yeah.
So having that kind of like planning for the plan meeting is really important.
Yeah. And so like that big picture overall strategy, if we, you know, mocha this out, who's in charge of that planning of the strategy?
Yeah.
Like, is that the campaign manager or is that something they can delegate to someone else on the team?
I think the bottom line person for this is definitely the campaign manager. You know, there are definitely pieces of that overall strategy that are going to be informed by the specialized expertise of other people. So, for example, if I'm figuring out what my pathway to victory looks like, and I'm a campaign manager, I'm going to go knock on Santiago's door and ask him to help me do the data analysis because that's his expertise. And so there are pieces that are going to inform that are owned by other leaders in your organization, but the overall strategy, the approval of that strategy, and the person who says, okay, this is what we're doing, that should be the manager. You do need one person who's actually going to take ownership over that in the end. I think that, you know, what your leadership style looks like and when you kind of stamp it is going to be different for everybody. Yeah. I'm somebody who likes to collect a lot of input before putting pen to paper on the strategy so that we're sort of harnessing the collective brain power of the team and then, you know, take a lot of feedback from the leadership team and say this is something we can continue to refine and tweak. But you also have to be clear about when that process is done and when you've kind of put that stamp on it and it's time to move.
Yeah.
And so thinking through your process, again, before you start planning, the process for planning and kind of like mapping that out is something that everybody is going to do a little bit differently, but that everybody should take the time to do.
Yeah. And I think one of the challenges around planning is this notion of like, okay, if you haven't done a plan yet, you have people on a team and you're like, okay, we're going to do this whole planning process. Figuring out things like the plan pathway to victory is like one step. There are obviously other components to the process. And so sometimes your team can kind of be sitting there waiting, like, what am I supposed to do? I can't write a organizing plan until I know what voters we're talking to. And so, you know, there's a little bit of tension there. How do you advise folks to kind of work their way around that or make sure they don't get stuck waiting on somebody else for another piece?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a challenge that I think we've all been in before. And a lot of it comes down to just like being respectful and patient and know that like the first crack you take at this isn't going to be perfect. You know, it's also the kind of thing where your process may operate on a different speed than someone else's.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to have to put placeholders in your plan and come back to it and say, okay, now that I've got this data or now that I have a clear understanding of who our audience is, we're going to have to make a few changes. That doesn't mean that you just like throw up your hands and say, okay, I quit. I'm done until I get my information. Like that's not a way to operate on a team. So I think like it's a super reality-based question. It absolutely happens. We spend a lot of time, for example, talking to organizing directors about why it's so important that they tailor their organizing model and approach to the communities they are trying to engage. It's like one of the biggest mistakes we make, right? Is that we just think a cookie cutter, one size fits all model can work anywhere, and it can't. We're constantly trying to get people to be more thoughtful about building your program around your people and like having a deep understanding of your people. And so that's true. It's also true that sometimes you got to like write a plan before you have an exact definition of who those people are and then come back to it and refine it. Your plan is a living document. It's not like going in a drawer and staying in a drawer until election day. You're going to be iterating on it a lot.
Yeah.
So having patience with yourself, with your team, understanding that sometimes you're going to operate with placeholders and come back and plug in that information. But like committing to be thoughtful and collaborative as much as you can, I think is really important.
Yeah, I think having those assumptions of like, okay, what are the core components of my role in this leadership team? Like, you know, if I'm an organizing director, what are the things I can figure out before we know concretely, you know, how large our universe is? Or, you know, if I'm a data director, maybe we don't have the most up-to-date models yet, but working off of what we have, you know, what can we use? And so I think, you know, for campaign managers, helping people find that spot when they are, you know, taking lead on a certain component, I think is really important. And apologies for the background noise here. We are literally setting up for the Arena Academy right now.
We are sitting in the convention center and folks are like setting up projector screens and moving furniture. So it's real, guys. We're in the trenches.
But okay, so we've written this plan. What do we do with this now? What is this all for?
So I think the first thing to remember here is that this is an internal facing document. This is not a document that you are showing the press. This is not a document that you are screenshotting and putting on the internet. This is not a document that you are sharing with every volunteer who walks into a campaign office. This is a playbook for you and your team to make sure that everybody understands how their specific role and the work that they're doing fits into the overarching strategy of how you're going to get your candidate elected. So that's sort of like number one. Number two, I think you have to remember that, yes, this was an exercise for you to go through, to think through every detail, to make sure you understand how all the puzzle pieces fit together. It's also not something that you're just going to put in a drawer and never look at again.
Yeah.
We always refer to as like the 24-hour media cycle is real. It is going to feel the realest it has ever felt on a campaign. And so the landscape is going to change. Things are going to happen. The plan that you write at the beginning of a campaign is not going to look exactly like the plan that you end up with in the final stretch. And so the strategy shouldn't change. If it does, you're probably in trouble, but the tactics might, the messaging might shift, your audiences might shift a little bit. And so being prepared and actually thinking through, okay, in a month or in 3 months, we're going to sit down again.
Yeah.
And we're going to look at this plan. We're basically going to edit it, is something that you should plan on. It is a living document. When I worked on the Obama campaign in 2012, and you went through this process too, Santiago, we wrote quarterly plans.
Yeah.
And every plan that we wrote for that quarter was a plan that went all the way through Election Day, but the most in-depth portion of the plan was for the quarter ahead. And then we would go through this exercise of like every 3 months, we would pull ourselves away in a conference room or a hotel room or someone's cabin or whatever, and take 3 days to like write the next quarter's plan. And again, it would go all the way through Election Day. And so there would be components that were in that first plan, but things were going to change, and they did.
Yeah.
And so I think, if you're on a big campaign that has a lot of moving parts, even being proactive about mapping out when you're going to revisit the plan and saying, okay, we're going to check in on the plan in 3 months, not a bad idea.
Yeah. I think that was huge for me when we were doing that as a department lead. I was data director in North Carolina. That was huge for me to help support my team, and say, all right, here's what we are focusing on right now. But also as the leader of the team, I could look ahead mm-hmm. kind of and see in advance, like, where are we going, and try to steer the ship a little bit. And so I imagine that's a big challenge for a lot of people who are doing this for the first time. It's just the challenge of trying to look ahead and seeing what this could potentially morph into.
Totally. And that actually reminds me of another thing we haven't mentioned, which is if you are on a big campaign with like layers and layers of staff, right? You've got like regional directors and then people who are on the ground, especially in an organizing team, you'll see that. The whole staff might not have the plan.
Yeah.
That's okay too. But you do have to train your staff on the plan.
Yeah.
So deciding what is the version of the plan that the leadership team operates with versus maybe a slightly abbreviated or abridged version of the plan that your regionals operate with versus, what like an organizer is going to have.
Yeah.
Those should look different because there's sort of information that people need to know and information that is just going to be superfluous to their daily existence. I think it comes back to this idea that what goes into the plan for someone, the purpose of it is to help them understand their role and how their work fits into the bigger picture. If you can accomplish that, you probably don't need to give them, the extra 10 or 20 pages that just aren't relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's so helpful in terms of just understanding, here's what we need to know, and not letting staff get lost in the weeds of something that's not maybe pertinent to their role.
Yeah. I have like so many memories of 2008, a volunteer walking into my office and being like, hey, I have some really important information for you that I think will help the president's communication strategy, and like handing me like a DVD or something that they created. And I'm like, this is not my lane. Right. Like, there's certain things just like aren't your lane.
Yeah.
And you don't have the time or the energy to engage with them. Not that volunteers don't sometimes give us excellent ideas to work with. They are the lifeblood of campaigns. But I think it's important to recognize that, right?
I think it's important to know, like, okay, people on the campaign have different roles. And it's like, if I'm going to be taking this up the chain, like, I'm also not the person who's executing or developing what that message is on the campaign. Like someone else has been hired to do that. Like there's a whole entire team devoted to that. And so sometimes that can be a big challenge of like trying to figure out, you know, as a first-time campaigner who's an organizer, like sometimes you are also just kind of learning what the role is and what makes up an entire campaign. So
you're like worried about meeting your door knock goals,
volunteer
recruitment goals. You're like, I don't have time for this. Yeah, exactly.
So what are the common mistakes, you know, pitfalls that come up along the way in either planning, updating a plan? Like what are those, if you've done the planning and taken those steps, what are the common things that people should look out for?
There are a couple that come to mind. One is definitely something we sort of talked about earlier, which is that people just dive straight into tactics and forget that those tactics need to be in service of a larger strategy. I think that's like the most common planning error. Another planning mistake, in my opinion, is when people set the quantitative goals, right, about how they're going to measure success with numbers, but then don't set qualitative goals, or they don't take time to reevaluate those goals along the way. Goal setting is hard, like figuring out what is the most ambitious goal we can set that is also realistic. That's a tough question.
Yeah.
You're always guessing. And it can be really demoralizing, for example, to set goals that you think are meetable and it turns out they're not.
Yeah.
And to then just say, well, those are the goals. Like, we're just going to stick with those because that's what we said the goals needed to be. Sometimes things don't ramp up as quickly as you think they will. This happens a lot in organizing, right? Where we say, okay, we're going to have X number of volunteers by X date, and it takes a little bit longer. Good organizing takes a long time to build because it's about investing in, you know, developing leadership in other people and building relationships with them. And that takes time. And so, you know, I've seen organizing directors say, okay, well, we said the goal was going to be 100, you know, volunteers recruited in this turf by October 31st. You have failed miserably. Maybe they didn't fail. Maybe that wasn't ever going to be possible. And so I think having the flexibility to actually reevaluate along the way and say, okay, we now have a more realistic picture of what this looks like, so we're going to make adjustments here, is necessary. The flip side of that is that goals are goals for a reason. They shouldn't be arbitrary, which is another mistake people make, right? They're just set like sort of arbitrary capacity goals. Your capacity building goals should always be a function of the outputs that you need to make, the impact that you need to make. So, you know, again, to use field, because it's probably the easiest example, you know, the number of volunteers that you need to have by October 1st should correlate directly with the number of doors you need to knock, the number of text messages you need to send, the number of phone calls you need to make. It shouldn't just be some number that you pulled out of thin air.
Yeah.
So if you are adjusting goals that maybe were too high or maybe they were too low, that happens too, then you need to make sure that, you know, they're all in service of your larger goals for your program. And if you're bringing them down earlier, that means they're probably going to go up later.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's just a constant sort of tightrope that you're walking as somebody who's responsible for building out that portion of the plan. So being adaptive, I think, is sort of like the banner here.
Yeah.
Really, really important. The other thing is that, like, if you're not doing that, your team is going to hate you, you know? And, like, if your team hates you, they're not going to work hard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not saying, like, be a manager that everyone loves, because that's not the point. But, you know, morale is important. We talk a lot about how important culture is. It can make or break the work.
Yeah.
And so taking those sort of softer, more qualitative goals and putting them alongside your quantitative goals, I think, are really important.
One concept I want to pull out is the concept of ramping up. I think a lot of times people can think, oh, we should front load a bunch of this. Why do we do, why do campaigns ramp up? And like, what does that look like? You know, it's not only just field, but at all different components of a campaign.
Yeah, I think, you know, to talk about the importance of ramping up, imagine that you're a candidate and you've decided that you want to run for Congress. Maybe you're a first-time candidate, just to kind of really get in the mindset. And it's the day before you launch. The day before you launch, you have no website, no email list. You have an open bank account with no dollars in it. You have no staff on payroll yet. You literally have nothing. You start with nothing. And, you know, we talk a lot about how building a campaign is like building a startup that you're then going to shut down on election day. Like, you're building this thing and raising all the money and then spending all the money by election day. And so, you know, I think if you can get into that mindset of we're literally starting with nothing, it's not like everything appears overnight.
Yeah.
And if you expect everything to appear overnight, you are in for like a dim reality check. So, you know, understanding that you're building from scratch, that people don't just show up overnight, that people aren't just going to like walk into your office because you hang a sign on the door. The whole like, if you build it, they will come thing does not work on most campaigns unless you have like a candidate who has some like crazy viral moment, which happens, but you can't count on. And so thinking about how you incrementally over time are going to build capacity, are going to recruit volunteers, recruit donors, recruit people to follow you on social media and on your email list, measuring the pace at which you're actually doing that. So you can get that reality check and say, okay, are the goals that I set to ramp up over time, do they make sense and reflect what is realistic? You know, that's something that you just have to integrate into your mindset from the beginning. You know, there are a lot of folks who have made the mistake of not investing in capacity building on campaigns because they think at a certain point in the election, people will just start paying a lot of attention and then people will just start flowing into our offices and, you know, signing up and donating, and it just happens. And then we can just go talk to all the voters. And I think what those people don't understand is that it takes months and months and months to build relationships with supporters.
Yeah.
And that is done in literally every aspect of the campaign if you're doing it right. So in organizing, it's happening face-to-face or on the phone or at someone's door or, you know, over text. It's also happening online through the digital work that we do on social media, over email, on our website. It's happening in how we build relationships with donors, right? Through fundraising. Every aspect of the campaign, if you're running a good campaign, is about building relationships with people, even if it's just these micro interactions. And that is simply something that takes time. And so if you're running a campaign that is relationship-based and not transactional, you're going to need to ramp.
Yeah.
And that's just got to be a given.
Yeah. And I think that's also connected to the phases of the campaign. Like at different points of that ramp, you're emphasizing different things.
Mm-hmm.
And being aware of what those kind of points of emphasis are, I think is important. I think also for campaign managers, being able to step back and see the big picture of it and knowing how different components of the campaign, whether it's your organizing, your digital, how they all come together to be in service of that plan and the goals that you're setting. One of the big challenges that I've seen on campaigns is like, you know, people figure out the strategy, figure out what they need to do to get to their win number. And then they hand that entire thing over to the organizing team. It's like, go get it.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you just set, you know, enormously high goals for this team that doesn't have a lot of resources maybe.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, how's the organizing team alongside every other component of the campaign, you know, working in service, and like, what are the voters that they should be most focused on? And so that's one of the things that, like, even here at Academy, like, I've tried to, like, be a big advocate of is, like, don't just hand them all of the entire campaign's goal and make it feel like you've put it on their back. Like, they have to know that, you know, what we're doing online, what we're doing in the press,
totally.
Like, all is coming together, and, like, they're talking to the voters that they're going to be most effective in talking to, because we need that face-to-face interaction. And so all of that coming together is like,
and it needs to be part of their training.
Yeah.
Right. And like the integration of everything that you're doing is the marker of a campaign that is disciplined and thoughtful and strategic and consistent. And I think the other thing here is that like there's creativity is important in campaigns, right? We never talk about this. It's like, get your stuff done, meet your goals, numbers don't lie, like sum is not a number, soon is not a time, right? Like that's the kind of stuff you hear in a campaign office, but like creativity matters so much. And I think it's something that we have sort of looked past or underinvested in as Democrats, frankly. And I get so excited at these academies because part of what I see happening with the next generation is that they're like, yeah, no, those might have been the rules for you, but those are not the rules for us.
Yeah.
You know, like we're doing it differently. And we have seen some of the most creative stuff come up in these simulations that we do.
Yeah. And I think that's what, when you give people realistic goals and you are setting them up for success, that also gives them, they're not burning themselves out to the point where they can't be creative.
Right.
You know, if you set goals that are unrealistic and people are just burning the candle at both ends, I don't know what, you know, type of metaphor you want to use there, but that leaves no space for any of that creativity or collaboration, or creates an environment where, you know, people feel like they're at odds with other parts of the campaign type of thing. So
I feel like we could do a whole podcast on campaign culture and sustainability and like how slowly that cruise ship is turning and how badly it needs to turn. Like this, the myth of like, the, you know, if you just work every waking minute, you're gonna, that's how you win. It's like the most absurd, like we know from science, that's not how people are productive or smart.
But if you don't have a campaign plan, that's what you're gonna do.
That's what you do, exactly. Exactly, because that's what you have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one important concept that I think is important for us to touch on this like campaign planning is like there are a lot of really close elections won and lost by hundreds of votes, by a coin flip in Virginia, even like it's so close. Like, how does that get incorporated into planning when you are thinking about, okay, how are we actually going to reach voters?
I think the most important thing, I keep saying the most important thing to remember, but like seriously, one of the most important things to remember is that whatever your job is on a campaign, you are fighting for margins, to win by tiny margins in most cases. If you're on a well-resourced campaign, chances are you're working on a very competitive, close election. And, you know, you're coming down to, in some cases, less than 1%. When I worked on President Obama's reelection campaign in Florida in 2012, we won the state and all 29 of its electoral votes because we won the popular vote in Florida by 0.8 percentage points, less than 1%. And so, you know, if you're somebody who's looking at the research, for example, and you're seeing that, you know, door knocking can have a certain impact, you know, some people would say it's like a 2% treatment impact or a 4% treatment impact. And so 2% of the people that you talk to and actually have a conversation with are then going to go cast a vote who otherwise wouldn't have, right? Yeah. If you see data like that and you find it demoralizing, you shouldn't, because in a statewide election or in a district election that are, when it's coming down to hundreds or thousands of votes and, you know, you're talking about 1 to 2 percentage points of victory margin, that's how you get that margin.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, whether you're working on a comms team or a digital team or an organizing team, or, you know, you work for the operations team and help the campaign run, or you're the manager and you're thinking about how to allocate resources, it's really important to keep that in mind. And then you should look at the research. You should, you know, look at the best practices and how much impact we think we can have based on the messages we're using and the tactics we're employing. But you should take it all with a big grain of salt, because the quality of your program, the content of your program, your message, your candidate, all of these things are things that make that impact that we're trying to measure really, really variable.
Yeah. And I think it's setting out like an intentional process to do a plan also helps you make this like holistic plan, where it's like all these different components, departments of a campaign come together to get you, you know, a fighting chance close to that margin. And I think we're at a really interesting time in campaigns. Like 2018 was, I think, a game changer for a lot of folks, because before, districts that had been totally written off as unwinnable, there's no way, you know, any Democratic candidate could win, like all of a sudden we're in play.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them came up short, some of them just were just over the finish line there, but those tactics, you know, that maybe only have a small effect, the whole sum of the campaign coming together around that, like, give them a fighting chance. And like, that's a really exciting thing when I, you know, it can feel daunting when you look at the research and you're like, oh, okay, the effects of these, you know, whether it's, you know, the effect of a turnout text or, you know, a persuasion text, maybe it's very small or, you know, negligible in some cases, like the type of program that you run can make those impacts even bigger. And I think, you know, given how many different types of districts are in play, like, you know, the last time somebody maybe ran in a competitive race, like maybe they only got 30% of the vote, like, but with good candidates backed up by a good campaign that's been thoughtfully planned out, like you could do it.
Totally. The one other thing that this reminds me of that is sort of a new concept in the last 5 years is the elasticity of the electorate.
Yeah.
And, you know, it used to be that when we would run a congressional campaign, we'd look at the Democratic Performance Index, which was what the analyst told us was what we could reasonably expect an average Democrat running an average campaign in an average year to get. And that's what we would start with. And if your DPI was less than 44, the DCCC wasn't going to invest in your race because they didn't think that a campaign could make up more than 6 points. And now we're seeing that like the concept of DPI is really sort of inherently flawed, and that sometimes what we thought was 44 turned out we were starting at like 49, because who the candidate is and what the message is and what the climate is matters so much, that, you know, what your impact could look like, it just varies tremendously.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the big caveat I give when we're teaching Pathway to Victory at Academy is like, your candidate hopefully is not the average Democrat.
That's right.
Like, you know, and so you can start off with the DPI, you can start off with a, you know, Democratic partisanship score, but like very look at that and say like, okay, demographic by demographic, like how is our candidate different than that? You might be fortunate enough to have polling that can guide you there, but you can also kind of look at it and say like, okay, what are we hearing when the candidate is out meeting people, shaking hands, like who is this message resonating with? Because good quality candidates like can put you in a position to win a district that people have written off.
Can I ask you a personal question? Just because I think that what you actually said about like when you're out there and what you hear and what you're listening to, like that's data that you need to be taking into. Have you ever lost a race that you didn't know you were going to lose, or won a race that you didn't know you were going to win?
No.
Me either.
No.
I think there really is something, like I'm not saying operate on your gut, like data matters, data matters, data matters. But there is something, there's so much out there, so many data points that our brains are processing on like a given day that we still don't have a way to conceptualize in a spreadsheet.
Yeah. And I mean, you're just taking every piece of information in where, you know, everything can kind of validate what you're seeing, and you're constantly in the plan, like as you're executing a plan, like everything coming back and saying like, are these assumptions right? Are these the things that we need to be doing? You know? And so if you are in a campaign, like you start to get a sense of that, and it could be in the IDs that you are collecting via your field program. It might be what you're starting to see pop in the press. Those types of things can be big indicators to, you know, be cautiously optimistic. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never gone and been like, oh, 100% going to win this thing. I might tell people that, but I don't know that I've ever operated under that kind of confidence. Uh-huh. But like, you know, you starting to kind of just kind of like get a sense, and like, you know, we lost North Carolina in 2012 Obama campaign, and that was really hard. And like, I can probably tell you different points, you know, and like, you know,
when you felt it,
when I felt it, you know, and so I wasn't necessarily surprised by it, but every single day, you know, I was trying to get us like, you know, okay, are we talking to the right voters? Do we have the right universe in place so that our team is talking to the right voters that put us in the position to be, you know, to get those extra votes, you know? And so every day was kind of like trying to, you know, make those adjustments. And so that's how I don't know.
It kind of reminds me of like, I feel like what we're doing when we look at polling data or research and sort of like take it literally, or, you know, as gospel, it's like going on a date with someone and only making a guess about whether or not there'll be a second date based on the things they said to you. When of course there's also like body language and the things they didn't say, and like all these other data points that like your brain is actually processing to kind of get a read on how this person feels about you. But we're like not taking all those data points into account when we like project a win or not in a spreadsheet or a model or whatever. And it would be really cool if we could find more ways to do that. But I think that that's like really important to actually like remember that that's true in life. That's also true when you're thinking about like, you know, projecting a win and the feel of how you're doing means something in addition to what you're seeing in the numbers.
When we did a persuasion experiment in 2012, and I think it's probably totally like the way that persuasion models are probably different. But on that campaign, one of the things is like we go through the questions and ask people how likely you are to support the president, give them the message, you know, some type of persuasion message. Mm-hmm. And then what we would actually capture after that was like, did the volunteer think that the person would change their mind to support them? Right. And that was like the first time that I had ever seen anything like that. And I haven't come across it personally. And that's not to say it's not out there somewhere, but that was the first time where it was like,
do you think this person actually will change their mind?
Right.
You
know, instead of saying, like, did you ask the person where they fell on a 1 to 5 spectrum at the end of the call? Like, what was your judgment of whether or not this person was moved?
Yeah. And I think that was then what informed, you know, okay, now we're going to use that to build a model.
Yep.
But, you know, we're missing out on a lot of different data points. And I think that gets to an important part of executing a plan is tracking what you're doing. And like, maybe you're not going to track all of those different things, but, you know, tracking your voter contact, listening to your volunteers as they're coming back in and saying like, you know, what's the mood out there? What's the temperature?
Yep.
Are people enthusiastically saying support, or are they just like, yeah, that, sure. It's not the other person.
Totally. No, this is, I mean, again, banner qualitative data matters to you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Kate. I think that's probably a good place for us to pause. Maybe we'll have like, you know, podcast 3, 4, 5 on this topic.
Yeah.
But it was really important to me that we got a chance to talk about campaign planning, given the fact that it's 2019. People right now, it's the most downloaded tool in the toolbox, most watched video in the toolbox. People are doing it, at all stages of it. So it means a lot that our first podcast for the Arena Boiler Room would be this one.
It is always a pleasure to nerd out with you.
Yes.
I'll be here anytime.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you.